You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Get out the eggs, flour, and sugar. It's time to do some baking. And not just some baking. We're going to turn it up to 11 today and bake some fantastical cakes. We are inspired in that endeavor by a new book by that title, Fantastical Cakes, Incredible Creations for the Baker in Anyone. It's the latest book by baker and educator, and I guess we could call her TV celebrity, Gesine Bullock Prado. Bullock Prado has her own show on the Food Network and her own baking school at her house in Hartford, Vermont. And she joins us today to help us kick our baking up a notch, starting with a really good understanding of the fundamentals and all the way up to your shiny mirror glazes, your multi-tiered, interestingly shaped, vibrantly colored cake creations. And she wants to make sure they taste good, too. Gesine, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Why a book about how to decorate? I know it's more than that. There are recipes. There's really good cake. But in a lot of ways, this is essentially a book on how to make your cakes look great as well. Why is that so important?
Well, you eat with your eyes first, right? So that's, you know, very important to make sure that what you present to people is beautiful, whether it is a little rustic or if it's sheer perfection, you know, that's really up to you. But the other thing is that, you know, in this Instagram world where everything looks so perfect and often probably doesn't taste that wonderful, it might not even be real. It could be styrofoam for all we know. It's a picture, right? So I really wanted to focus on this need for people to, you know, it's an aspirational thing to make these gorgeous cakes. And so I see that in my students where they're just so frustrated. They're like, you know, I've got the baking skills down, I think, but it's the finishing work that gives people trouble. So I said to myself and to my students, it will be my job to show you how to make these wonderful tasting things beautiful. And that's what's crucial here, is that whatever you're eating should be as good as it looks. And when I was a kid, I found that, you know, I saw this one decorating book that I was just obsessed with. My aunt had it. And whenever we went to her house, I would just flip through it. And it was just, you know, it was canned icing and box cakes. But, you know, they looked fantastic. And then I would go to bakeries and pastry shops and I'd go, oh, these cakes are beautiful. And when I was allowed one, I was always disappointed that it never tasted as beautifully as it looked. So I think my whole life led up to this book, and that I wanted to show people how to make beautiful cakes from the inside out.
But Gesine, I am a child of the 80s and a child of strong women, and I was told it's not about what it looks like on the outside. You have to be beautiful on the inside. So is it just our own vanity that makes us want to get that wow out of someone when we show up with a beautiful cake? Or is there actually something valuable about having a cake or, you know, whatever it is that you're baking, having the presentation be as beautiful as the flavor?
Well, it shows attention, but there's something to the fact that even if it's a very simple cake, I can look at a cake and know if the bake is good on the inside. There are things that you can do in the bake and in the filling that will create a more beautiful cake on the outside simply from taking the time to do things correctly before you even put it in the oven. So I would say that, yes, sure, it's superficial, but it also shows attention to detail. It shows care. And from the perspective of the baker, it can be a wonderfully meditative and special thing to sit there and meditate on the person for whom you're making a cake and make it beautiful. It's like a flower arrangement. You just don't throw dead flowers and willy-nilly into a vase. You take the time with the thoughts of the people for whom you're making it in your heart while you do it. So superficial maybe, but loving certainly.
Gesine, you actually put it right in the introduction of the book that this is not designed to be a book where people have to spend hours and hours and hours and hours and be super, super, super skilled. I mean, you're trying to have a book here for home bakers who don't necessarily have 7 days to bake a beautiful wedding cake, but want something nice. I mean, part of me says, I don't believe it. I don't believe that I can actually make these creations without, you know, just totally stressing myself out. But that's what you've tried to do, right?
I have. And the thing, too, is that there's some things you can make ahead. Like cake layers are infinitely freezable. And oftentimes, the crumb turns out better for that freezing. As long as you have a freezer that isn't horrible to you and goes through kind of vast ranges of temperature dips, then if you wrap your layers well, you will be rewarded with a slightly tighter crumb, just as much moistness, so that you can do that ahead of time, and then you can play and have a little more comfort in the assembly and decorating area. I mean, there are other things that you could assemble some cakes and freeze them before you decorate the outside. And so I laid out the book giving multiple layers and fillings and coating options so that you can essentially mix and match, or you can decide to tackle one of the cakes that I show with the specific fillings and layers that I chose myself, or you can choose your own. It's like choose your own adventure and cake, right? So why not? And then there's some things that I love, like I call it puppet dust, which is if you have extra cake, and specifically chocolate cake or maybe a red velvet, and you have some extras that you usually eat as snack, you can dry those bits of cake in the oven at a very low temperature, let them cool, and then pulverize them in a food processor. And you essentially have this dust that if you look at your cake and you frosted it and you try to make it as smooth as possible and you're like, I don't like it, then you can actually press this dust against the side and tops of your cake and have this beautiful finish, but also literally mold the cake to your wishes. Make it as smooth and as stable as you like with this one little ingredient that you can keep in your freezer and just drag out when you're having that moment of like, you know, anguish. And you can go, I've got puppet dust.
This Why do you work. Call it puppet dust?
Well, originally I called it Muppet dust and I had to stop. Because
trademark.
Because if you have a vibrant color, like I would use a green for like, you know, St. Patrick's Day, and I would have this extra cake. It actually looks like Muppet fur. So trademark issues. So puppet dust now. But the orange actually looks like Cheetos. So maybe you want to, you know, not do some orange.
Yeah.
Unless
so,
you have
okay,
a Cheeto
so not
cake.
Orange.
Yeah.
But how long can that keep in your freezer? Because, of course, things eventually, even in the freezers, do go bad.
Well, since it's baked and dried, I would say indefinitely. I think Ooh. Food services would say not so much. But oftentimes I say until you find it again. Because isn't that the case with the freezer? You're like going through, you're like, oh, wow, I forgot I had puppet dust.
Right. Now I better bake a cake.
Exactly.
And how long can those cake layers that you've frozen stay okay?
A few weeks to a month, depending on how well you have wrapped them and depending on your freezer. So, you know, some freezers do tend to go through cycles where they, when you get those little ice crystals on your ice cream, where it tends to thaw a little. So you get less time than 2 weeks, I would say, for that freezer, otherwise a month.
Okay. I want to ask about two things that you already said, and people who watch the Great British Bake Off will be like, duh, I know what that is. But you mentioned a bake, so, you know, your bake will be better depending on what you're doing. And you also talked about the crumb of a cake. Can you can you define those two things?
Well, the bake is literally your how you baked off either your cake, your cookie, your croissant, whatever that is. So that is the bake. And the process is also the bake. and then as far as crumb, it is the consistency of the cake itself. When you cut it open, do you have vast holes in there where from a lot of aeration, and sometimes there's tunneling, which means that you overmixed your cake, and sometimes you have a very tight crumb because you didn't cream well enough, or sometimes you have a very tight crumb because that's the nature of the cake. It's a pound cake. It has a very tight crumb. So these are all words that might sound alien, but they actually have, you know, significance in the cake world.
Let's talk about some of the fundamentals here. And one of them is you actually have an acronym for how you think about your baking process. I'm going to make you say it, you know, then the FCC can't come after me.
Right. Well, it's called BADASS. But it's an acronym.
That's right.
It actually came up naturally. I wasn't trying to be naughty. So I on the one hand, I didn't try to avoid it, but it gave itself to me.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So, yeah, sure. But the first thing is bake ahead, which we talked about. You can bake ahead your layers. The second thing is you dam. And that means that if you have a filling like lemon curd, that you can't just slap it on your cake willy-nilly, because what happens when you start stacking those layers, you are weighing down that relatively soft filling and asking it to just fly out the sides of the cake. So what you do is you take your sturdier icing or whatever it is that you are coating your cake with, and you create a pretty sturdy dam on the inside of that layer first, and then you put in that softer filling. And that is literally a dam. It keeps that from bulging out of the sides. I call it, you know, it's like a Spanx for cake.
Yeah, or like like the edges of a pool. Yeah.
And then you assemble and you do things like you skim coat or crumb coat the outside of the cake, which will help you, Jane, when your cake is flying off the handle when you're trying to decorate the top of it. The other thing that helps with that is freezing the cake.
Freeze the cake. Got it. Now I can't wait to go home and freeze cakes.
So even if you are going to not make the cake ahead of time, I do recommend putting that layer after it is cooled in the freezer for a bit, because it stabilizes the cake, the crumb, and it helps you in decorating it, so that you, first of all, if you have that problem where you're icing the top and crumbs come off, they will be tightened and will stay put when you ice it. Mm. Also, if you tort a cake or cut it in half or into separate layers, freezing it not all the way through, because then you're just – I call it the bagel cut. You know, you're sawing through it and you're like, whoops. but just enough so that the crumb tightens, it will allow you to cut the cake in half or into multiple layers without shedding cake on the inside. And I know everyone's done that. You know, you're like, the cake is cool. I need two layers. I'm just going to cut it in half. And then you like lift that top layer and you're like, I just lost half the inside of my cake.
Mm.
So freezing it that small bit tightens that crumb and allows you to cut it in half without that loss of precious, precious stuff inside. And then, you know, you've got your finishing bits on the outside. Like if you have the time to make things beautiful, then you take that time. You can also make some things ahead of time, like gum paste decorations or fondant decorations, if you are so inclined. But all those things, you know, to me are crucial, because I love cakes so much and I like them to be beautiful. But you can pick and choose what you want to do in your own cakes and they'll still be beautiful.
Again, today we're talking with Gesine Bullock Prado, and we're talking about how to make cakes both beautiful and delicious. And there's something to be said for presentation, for showing your affection for your intended recipients by having something that just really makes them excited before they even take a bite. If you have a question, though, about how to achieve that, or, you know, even questions about the fundamentals of baking and baking cakes and how having all of those fundamentals stacked on top of each other can help you get that amazing finish, our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your comments and your photos if you want on the Vermont Edition or the VPR Facebook page. Is probably the best place to do it. Go to the VPR Facebook page and post there. Colleen is calling in from Waterford. Hi, Colleen. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I have a question about baking a cake in a bundt pan. I've had several cakes that I've made as layer cakes and perhaps even sheet cakes. Can I use any recipe and bake it in a bundt pan?
Gesine?
Pretty much, yes. You will just have to keep in mind that because you are packing in a lot of batter into one finite area, that it will take much longer to bake, usually up to half hour to 45 minutes more, depending on the batter itself. So, yes, you can. The other thing that I really recommend with bundts is that even though most bundt pans declare themselves to be of a nonstick nature, they are not of a nonstick nature.
Don't
trust the bundt saying that it's nonstick. What I recommend is doing a combination of things. So you can either butter it and then flour it. What can happen there, though, is that if you have too much flour that gets into the crevices, when you release the bundt, you will have these lovely little fissures of flour just kind of floating on top, and it's not too tasty. The other thing that works incredibly well is spraying a generous amount of baker spray in the pan, which is a spray that has a bit of flour in it. So that it kind of diffuses evenly and it makes it easier for the cake to release. So the answer is yes, Colleen, you can use pretty much any batter. Just realize that baking time increases and that you have to use some kind of medium that allows you to actually release that puppy from the pan.
Not specific to Bundt pans, but you talk about how to prepare your pans. And this was actually more involved than I thought it would be, from, you know, only buttering the bottom and not the sides to actually creating like a koozie for your pans.
Yeah, koozie. I like that. I wish I'd used that word before I wrote the book.
I got one
koozie.
Over.
Woo. Cake koozie. Okay. The reason I only butter the bottom of the pan and then I put a round of parchment on the, on the bottom as well is that, you know, it says 8 inches on the cake pan, 9 inches, whatever. However, sometimes when you bake, if you grease the sides of the pan, it will shrink, which is pretty normal because that's what happens when it bakes. And then depending on how many layers you have baking in at the same time, they will shrink to various degrees. So when you start assembling the cake and frosting the sides, it is like this wavy gravy endeavor.
Mm-hmm. So you want consistency.
So you want consistency. You want, if it says it's an 8-inch cake, you want an 8-inch cake. So if you do not grease the sides, then it will cling to the sides of the cake pan. And then you just take a paring knife and you release it from the sides, and then each of your layers will be exactly 8 inches. And there's that. And also, icing the sides of it is so much easier. It is so much easier because you don't have these divots like, you know, in the middle layer. It happens to have shrunk a little, so you have like an inch worth of frosting on the side versus half an inch on the next layer. So it is for you. It actually will make decorating easier. It will make the cake look better, but it's actually better eating as well. So every bite has the same consistent amount of frosting and cake.
But then with the cake pans themselves, you're like ripping terry cloth and putting it around it, and this was just super involved. I've never even thought about doing that.
Well, the reason I do that, so what I do is I take my old kitchen towels and I cut them into strips. I get them wet or damp and I wrap them around the sides of the cake pan. Already you're like, oh, this is too much time. And then I wrap that in a layer of aluminum foil to protect the sides because they are moist, everyone's favorite word. So you don't want them to dry out in the oven. So you can buy these cake strips. There are commercial cake strips in on the market. But I find that they work a little too well. They can make cakes gummy. And also, everyone has that kitchen towel that you really want to get rid of and you don't know what to do with it.
So this gives you a good excuse.
Gives you a good excuse. And you can use safety pins because they're metal. They're oven safe to hold all the strips together. And the reason I go through all this rigmarole is that cakes will tend to dome, which they get that lovely little mountain on top because the sides set first because they get heat first from the oven. And then the middle keeps growing, right? Because, you know, that hasn't gotten the heat yet. So it slowly grows and then you've got this little Mount Vesuvius. So what happens if you have this plan that you want a specific height of cake and with so many layers, if your cake domes, then you're going to cut off that dome if you want to make your decorating life easier. And then I call that snacks. And then you find that you only have one layer where if it had baked evenly, you might have two. So you save yourself quite a bit of time in taking that extra step to coat the outside of your pans in this little koozie, thank you, that will help everything rise more evenly. Because what you do is you create an atmosphere where the outside and the inside of the cake start rising evenly so that you have a flat top versus having that dome.
On the other hand, if you really need your Muppet dust, you might want to have the doming. Then you have all of that extra cake that you can use for your dust.
That is so true. I'm so glad you're listening. So you could do either way. Yeah. And then for me, it's important because I really like tall cakes. So doming does become an issue. So I take that time. And I'm not saying that you have to do it. I'm just giving you a little advice that if you have trouble with doming or if it bothers you because then you have to make another batch of cake to get the amount of layers that you were going for, then you have a way of making that happen.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are talking with baker and fantastical cake creator Gesine Bullock Prado. You can actually catch her tomorrow evening at Northshire Books in Manchester, Vermont, for their annual charity bake auction. She's donating a cake to the auction and judging the competition. Because, you know, we got a note from Mark who says, making a beautiful cake is certainly a matter of pride for any aspiring baker, especially if you can make your cake look as good as it tastes. But let's not kid ourselves. Baking as a business requires an appealing-looking product, not just a delicious one, in order to succeed. A more premium-looking cake can justify a higher price. But you've seen some pretty dodgy things in the professional cake baking business over the years.
Oh, I have. And I think that that comment is absolutely right, that there is a premium on beauty and on time. And I one of the reasons I wrote the book is that there are a lot of home bakers who have small businesses where they decorate wedding cakes and other cakes. And their pride and joy, obviously, their Instagram pride and joy, is showing how beautiful the cakes are. And so they need this dependability and certainty of the bake. And so oftentimes they will use a box mix. And it won't be half as good as if you made it from scratch. So I created these formulas, which are just as easy as box mixes.
You even call them like the box mix cake, but it's not a box mix. It's a U-mix.
Yeah, exactly. And you can make that dry mix, keep it in your cupboard, and then add the wet ingredients to it whenever you're ready. And it's going to be so much better than the stuff you get at the grocery store. But I find that that's for the, you know, home bakers. My heart goes out to the people who have these small businesses. However, I was looking at a bakery in Austin, Texas once, and they were going out of business. And it was the preeminent baker to go to if you wanted an event cake. So this place had baked for the governor, you name it. They'd done it all. And so I was really excited about, even if, you know, my idea of having another bakery in another state was, you know, a good one or not, I was just excited about going into someone's kitchen. Mm-hmm. And if they were doing all this wonderful stuff, wouldn't they have the best equipment and the best ingredients? And I was just excited just to snoop. But what I found was a wall full of box mixes and tubs full of ready-made icing. And my heart broke. I was appalled. Because it was a bakery. It was a fancy bakery. It was a famous bakery. But they really weren't doing the work of bakers. They were doing what anyone at home could do by just going to the grocery store and getting a box. And to me, that was such a failure on their part to their customers. But, you know, so my feeling about it is that if you're going to call yourself a bakery, you better for damn sure make everything from scratch.
You better be baking.
You better be baking. For reals, as the kids would say.
All right. So here's a question for getting a better bake. Will says, please explain creaming and the creaming process. I used to, as a child, help my grandmother bake. She would have me use a tablespoon and mash whipped butter and sugar until my arm hurt. She later got a mix master. And Will says, I have a KitchenAid mixer. I still don't understand what is enough or not enough creaming.
You know, this is just a beautiful question, because I find that in teaching my students, who are – some of them are, you know, very novice bakers, and some are relatively experienced, and some are even professional, that creaming can be one of those things that is just a mystery. And it's because you never get a picture of it. They just say till light and fluffy.
Yeah.
And so the deal is that when you start mixing together butter, room temperature butter, very important, and sugar, that the sugar essentially punches holes in the butter and aerates it. And you get to this one point in the mixture where it looks like wet sand and it's still very yellow. You can see the yellow of the butter shining through. Now, when you get to this point, it's fine to make a cookie or a flat cookie because you're not looking for aeration, but it's not good for a cake. What you're looking for is for that mixture to literally be white. It has to look snow white and to have a buoyancy and a fluffiness. And to start almost mounding around the mixing implement you're using, whether it's a paddle or a whisk. And you're looking for it to almost be cloud-like and no longer have that wet, sandy look. And the reason is because you're aerating the butter and sugar to create pockets, air pockets, where your leavening, whether it's usually baking powder, can expand in those holes. The smaller those holes are, the less expansion you'll get. The bigger they are, the more buoyant and lovely your cake will be. So if you under-cream, you'll end up getting a denser cake.
Can you over-cream? I mean, I know you can over-mix, but could I, like, put on the stand mixer, go watch an episode of Real Housewives, and come back and have my butter and sugar still be in great shape?
In Vermont, yes, because our kitchens are so cold. But yes, you can overcream. And what will happen is that the mixture will start breaking. So you're, you know, the emulsion, that suspension of fats and liquids will start to break down and heat, and it will look curdled, wet, and sad. So that can happen. It actually takes quite a long time for that to happen, because creaming can take up to 5 to 10 minutes, sometimes more, depending on the temperature of your butter. And some people ask, well, why can't I just melt the butter? But then you don't have any substance for the sugar to punch. You need it to be room temperature so that that aeration and that fluffiness can actually take hold. But yeah, you can overcream. It's kind of hard to do, but you can do it if you really try.
Okay, but don't worry, you know, in generally speaking, about overcreaming. Give it a little more time rather than a little less time.
That is correct.
Okay, but so I often am in a rush, and I know it says room temperature eggs and room temperature butter. I usually put both over by my oven so they're getting warm while the oven is preheating. Sometimes I microwave the butter to try to make it soft. I don't know what to do about the eggs, like hold them in my hands and blow on them. How important is it really to have everything at room temperature?
Very, very important. And, you know, I'm totally fine with you nuking your butter. If you know your microwave well and you don't melt the middle of it, go for it. Make it room temperature in the nuclear way. But eggs, you can get them to room temperature quickly by putting them in a bowl of warm water. Leaving them out overnight is what I usually do.
So overnight, you leave them the whole night.
Yeah, I'm really proud of my eggs. I know that they'll do me okay if I
yeah, because you have chickens, right?
I have chickens,
don't you, that are making your eggs.
In general, I'm just not worried that those eggs will go off overnight. So even if I get them at the grocery store, I'm totally cool with it. I'm fine. I'm baking them anyway, so you know it all comes out in the wash. if something bad happened, then as long as they're not rotten, it'll be fabulous. But the other thing is that so. I explained why in creaming, if your butter is too cold, then it will take you a day to cream that butter and sugar properly. So assuming that you took my advice and you had room temperature butter and you creamed it, it's gorgeous, it's white and fluffy, woo-woo, you're so happy. And then you crack a cold egg and you put that in there, what happens? You seize that butter. All that work that you went through, you just hardened it. And it will become clumpy, and it won't release itself and become this beautiful aerated batter. What happens is you'll get these chunks of butter that when you bake that cake, you'll see these little like volcanoes of sugar and butter that kind of burst out. They almost look caramelized, and that's what happened. You've got these little chunks of butter that weren't well incorporated into the rest of the mix because you added that cold egg. How dare you?
I know. I'll never do it again.
No.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we are talking with celebrity baker Gesine Bullock Prado. She's sharing tips for making a cake that, like the rest of us, is beautiful both inside and out. Her new book is called Fantastical Cakes, Incredible Creations for the Baker in Anyone. Kathy in Burlington emailed in Gesine to say, or she called but couldn't stay on the line, and she says she went to culinary school. She's really good at making the actual cakes. She needs help with tips on how to finish them and specifically how to have a nice smooth icing. So we've spent some time on the fundamentals. We could do a whole other show on that, and I'm sure we will again. But let's get to the icing. How do you do it?
Well, I think the first thing is that your assembled cake, if you do it the right way, where all the layers are exactly the same width, and if you have dammed properly and everything is looking great as far as the structure of the cake itself, then making sure that the whatever coating you're using, and I usually use a Swiss or an Italian buttercream, that first of all, you make it right. So one thing that happens with a buttercream is that as you are whipping it up and you're adding the butter, sometimes it'll start to look curdled and you just have to – that's the puberty of buttercream. You just have to leave it alone for a few minutes. It just wants to be alone.
Give it some space.
Give it some space, 5 minutes, and then it will come together and lose that curdled look. That's just – that is an emulsion that's gone off because of temperature, but it will – it set itself right. Now, the next thing is that once that comes together, you have to step away again and let that continue mixing for 2 to 3 minutes to be completely smooth and aerated. Because otherwise, if you decide to put the buttercream on the cake too early, it can be chunky and separated. So give it those few more minutes of time just to, you know, zhuzh it. And then when you apply the buttercream, I do a crumb coat first, or I call it a skim coat because I also love to tile and do stuff at home on my house. So I apply – I actually sometimes use tools that I get at the hardware store on cakes. Don't tell
anyone. Double purpose.
Yeah, double purpose. I make sure that I do a very smooth crumb coat over the sides of the cake, which is literally scraping a very thin layer of icing over the top and the outside. Just to make sure that you trap any crumbs in there, you then refrigerate to make sure that it's literally set. You can tap the side of the cake and it will feel a little hard because buttercream sets beautifully. And then what I do is I pipe my icing on in strips so that I have an even depth of icing all the way around. And then I will use
like strips back and forth, or do you, if it's a circular
cake? I just do rounds.
Cake.
Like, okay. First of all.
Like a hooked rug.
Well, what I do is I have a piping bag. I will also have a turntable so that I can turn the cake as I go along. And I literally do strips of icing all the way around the cake again and again and again. Just keep spinning the cake, keep piping my frosting so that's all the same depth. And then I do the same thing on the top. And I will take either an offset spatula or an icing spatula. I will heat it up a little and then I will turn my cake stand, and I will gently put that icing spatula up against the side of the cake and scrape the sides of the frosting to smooth them. Now, some people aren't exactly straight as far as how they hold utensils, so you have to make sure that you're level when you do it. But there are some tools, if you are professional, or if you aspire to do things perfectly, that will help you make sure that the sides of the cake are absolutely flawless. And they're called acrylics. And they're just round pieces of acrylic that are a little larger than the width of your cake. And you put them on the bottom and the top. And you make sure that they're adhered with a little bit of buttercream. And then you use those as your guides to ice your cake. You literally put the frosting on all around the cake, a little outside the bounds of your acrylic, and then you take that icing spatula and you scrape along the sides, and you have this perfect guideline on the top and the bottom of your cake that will leave it flawless. And you don't have to tell anybody that you used a guide. Just, you know, it's our secret.
And if some of this is difficult to picture, there are pictures on how to do all of these things in Fantastical Cakes, the book. So it's, you know, you can read and listen and see them. We have a note from Gael who says, please talk me through that super shiny chocolate glaze. I'm a big fan.
Oh, mirror glazes are all the rage. They're beautiful to watch being put on. Like, there are YouTube channels just for mirror glazes. The things that are important about mirror glazes is that they're incredibly easy to make, but it's a process in that you have to make the glaze and it gets very hot, and then you have to be patient because it has to cool down to a specific temperature in order to apply it. So this is the patience part of the baking game. The other thing is that the cake upon which you are putting the glaze has to be incredibly cold and incredibly smooth, which is incredibly unfair because it has to look great before you put the great finish on it. The same is true for fondant. When you see like the perfectly fondanted cake, what they put that fondant on was a great looking cake to begin with, totally smooth. Anything that is bulgy or nicked will come through in the glaze or in the fondant. I'm so sorry. It's just the deal with these things. The other thing about it is that you have to apply the glaze the second the cake comes out of the freezer. So my advice is that you make this very smooth coat, you put it in the freezer, get it set. If you wait too long, then you get condensation on the top of the cake, and it will cause bubbles in your glaze. So this is a timing thing. You just have to make sure that it's actually an easy thing to make. It is that patience of waiting for it to get to temperature and then getting your timing right of getting the cake out and being ready to glaze it that, you know, it becomes the fun.
So if we're thinking lots of holiday parties around this time of year, everybody's social calendar tends to fill up, and maybe you're on your way to something and you want to bring a cake. I want to know, so the one that I would like to make is your Black Forest cake that has mini toadstools on top, and it just looks stunning. But what's your recommendation for a showstopper that you think almost anybody could make that might be great for this time of year?
Oh, there's so many. So many. Well, one of my favorite is the ginger spice cake that I make. And the great thing about it is it's infinitely freezable when it has been assembled. And you decorate the outside, at least I do, with gingerbread cookies that have been very simply decorated. So what you can do is you can make the elements ahead of time. You can even make and assemble the cake and freeze it ahead of time. And the day that you're going to go or the night before, you would put that cake in the refrigerator so that you're not serving frozen cake. And then you bring your beautiful cake along with you to the party, and you have your cookies along for the ride, and then you gently press the cookies up against the side of the cake. So if you have nicks on the cake, no one will notice. You just put a beautiful cookie on top of it. And that, for me, is my favorite holiday cake, because not only is it delicious, it's very transportable, and you can fix any oopsies once you get there with cookies that you have baked just for the purpose to decorate the cake around the sides of it.
That sounds like my kind of way to take something to a party. I can fix any problems once I already get there. And the best way to say thank you when somebody says, oh my gosh, that's stunning.
Well, the best way to say thank you is to say thank you and not go through the litany of what you did wrong. And this is – Julia Childs would said this as well. Don't apologize or kind of go through the litany of things that, you know, you wish had been better. Just say thank you, because they want to eat it and be happy. So that's your job, is just to say thank you and cut a big slice of cake.
Gesine Bullock Prado's newest book is called Fantastical Cakes, Incredible Creations for the Baker in Anyone. You can see her tomorrow evening at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester. She's going to be judging a cake auction and submitting a cake herself. She's also the host of the Food Network show Baked in Vermont, and she teaches classes at her home baking studio, Sugar Glider Kitchen. We will put links to all of those at vpr.net. Gesine, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I thank you so much for talking cake with me. Best hour of my life.